listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, June 3rd. My name is Michael Kelly and I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Michael. Glad to be here.
Welcome to those joining us live as well as to those listening to the archives. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. Now, tonight, we're going to begin directly with Dr. Douglas Kelly and his presentation on being best.
Hello, everybody. Good to be back with you. Hope everyone's doing good, doing well in this pandemic and whatnot, protests and different stuff. The topic for tonight is the greatest gift you can give, and we've mentioned this in times past, but I think it's apropos to discuss it in these times because a lot of people, I think, are afraid on different fronts. They're afraid of the virus. Of course, that's kind of waning a little bit, at least in terms of the fears, I think, but doesn't mean that the virus is waning so much. It is in different places, but it's still a potential threat. But there's that, and then there's the current protests that are going on around the country and, frankly, the world over the killing of George Floyd, black African-American, because it's redundant, but, you know, killed by the police officer in Minneapolis. And I know a lot of folks are afraid what's going on, and I wanted to try to offer some words of comfort and some reassurance that, you know, this stuff's been going on for decades. You know, we're trying to work it out of the system, I think. And I'm sorry, frankly, that we have to go through this stuff again, that we've been going through this race stuff for quite a few years now. It kind of pops its head up here and there in terms of national attention. But, you know, this should have been figured out back in the 60s. I'm just sorry that we're still dealing with it. It's just ridiculous. We should be dealing with this type of thing. And I'm happy to say that I just absolutely do not understand the whole race thing. And I'm glad about that. Hopefully you don't either. And you know what I'm talking about. I don't understand what the big deal is. People are people. So what does it matter what color their eyes are, you know? Some people have brown eyes, some have people green eyes, some have blue eyes, some have, you know, hazel eyes. Doesn't matter what color your eyes are. So, you know, why should a person with brown eyes be any, you know, better than a person with blue eyes, and so to speak? Now, you get my drift, right? It's ridiculous. Who cares what color the skin is? It just doesn't matter. And yet that seems to be so ingrained in some people that it's beyond belief. It just, you know, we need to evolve, world. You know, we need to stop this nonsense of racial inequality. It just needs to be stopped. It's ridiculous. Okay, I'm just beating that horse now. But anyway, the point is that we're working out of our system. It's going to take some time, but hopefully, and I have hope, that humanity will work it out, will get it out of its system. Doesn't mean that certain individuals won't hold on to prejudices and biases, but I think it's going to get better as time goes on. And frankly, it has gotten better as time has gone on, especially since the 60s. And of course, we don't have, you know, the anything to the degree that it was back in those times. You know, the segregation. Oh, you know, a few years ago, we were doing a paranormal investigation. Man, it's been 10 years or more ago. It was an old fire station in Tampa, Florida, St. Petersburg. Now, I don't remember which. But we were there, and it was being, it had been, it was, it's no longer a fire station. It was sold, and they were renovating it and making it into a home or something. Anyway, we got permission from the owners to just go in there, and it was all in disarray. It was gutted. You know, there wasn't, and there was some old stuff, you know, old building materials and different things that were still in there. And there was a door in there. It wasn't on a hinge. It was just leaning up against the wall. And on the door, it said something like colored folks. And it was obviously a bathroom door for colored folks. And, you know, that just stuck with me. It was abhorrent. It offended my sensibilities, honestly. And so we don't have that sort of thing, you know, anymore. So it's getting better. It's getting better. And sometimes we have these hiccups, but there's some, this kind of goes along with what I'm wanting to bring out. In terms of the greatest gift that you can give. And I'll tell you what that is right now, and then we'll explore it more. Basically, the greatest gift you can give to another person is kindness. And that comes in different forms. An encouraging word. You know, it's a gift of an encouraging word. So many of us are trying our best. We're trying to deal with what life's thrown at us. You know, with the pandemic, a lot of folks are out of work. They're having hard times. They're trying their best. And I maintain, and will always maintain, that most people do not lie awake at night dreaming up ways to hurt other people. Now, granted, some people are just they're unthoughtful. They're not kind. They're discourteous. But they don't necessarily mean to be that way. You know, life gets them, and they just end up acting out that way at times. But I don't think people, literally most people, literally intend to hurt other people. It's a lack of awareness. We've mentioned that before. So in these times, an encouraging word can go a long way. A smile can go a long way. Of course, you know you can't smile if you're wearing a mask. You can. Maybe your eyes smile too. That'd help. But, you know, an encouraging word, a valid compliment to somebody for a job well done, a pat on the back, you know. And even deeper than this is striving to see the good in others. You know, not giving in to the urges to think negatively if we have those, you know. Look, I'll be the first to admit that we can all be frustrating. People can be frustrating, you know, to different people. But if we bear in mind that most people are doing the best they can with the knowledge, the experience, the resources, and the level of awareness that they have at the moment, it helps to kind of cushion those things a little bit. And so many people are in such desperate need of a little encouragement. And so that's the greatest gift we can give, that kindness, that encouragement, that good word, that good morning, a cheerful good morning, or how are you, and really being, mean it, you know, being sincere. How are you? How are you doing? And that's the greatest gift that we can give to another person, especially in these times. And so as you go about your day, maybe you're following the news with all the protests and different things, in what way can you have a positive impact on those within your sphere of influence? It might be your partner, spouse, children, colleagues, friends, relatives. You know, when was the last time you told somebody close to you that, you know, what you thought of them in terms of how good they do or how much you really love them? Or, you know, I'll give you an example. I just did this last night. We have our son Nick has two children. We have two grandchildren, and he hooked up with a gal, very nice gal, and she has a daughter, 5-year-old little girl, and she's a cutie. And so she's been essentially adopted now. She's one of the grandkids, and yesterday and the day before, we were watching her for her mom as she worked at the veterinarians. And Tracy just, you would have never known that Summer was not her own grandchild. Tracy just did a remarkable job, took her to the store and bought her some cute little clothes and dresses and toys and things, and just absolutely treated her like she was her own, because that's the way Tracy views it. And that, to me, was just a beautiful thing. And I told Tracy that. It's one of the reasons I love her. She's just such a genuinely good person, kind person. And that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. You know, somebody's close to you. When was the last time you told them that they did a great job or that you really appreciated this or that about them? You know, and genuinely conveyed that to them. You know, sometimes we can fall into the trap of taking one another for granted. And nobody likes to be taken for granted. You know, we're all trying to do our best. We're trying to get through this life, through this world, and so forth. And sometimes it's nice to hear those good words, those compliments, those nice things about it. It builds us up, and it gives us a little bit of oomph, if you will, a little bit of encouragement, or gives us a, what's the word I'm looking for, a kick in the butt. Not really the word I was looking for, but...
Well, if I could offer, it just gives you that hope and encouragement, and really that it lights that fire about hope and the goodness of humanity and the potential goodness of the future, the potential happiness that could be there.
Mm-hmm. Good points. Any comments, Dr. Hunter?
No, I'm listening. I agree on all fronts.
Right, so...
Very good.
So... Okay, so anyway, let's bring in now the principles of belief in light of the current world situation. I'm talking specifically about the protests and so forth. You know, the first one comes to light. Do no harm, do right. You know, if everybody was practicing that, we wouldn't be having protests. We wouldn't be having racial issues. And, you know, I maintain there's no races. There's just one race, the human race. You know, the second point is we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. So we look within and we understand that everybody is equal. And this leads into number three. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. And, of course, this is one. And this is what we're striving to sort out, to resolve this whole ridiculous race thing. And then number four, we are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. These people who think that other races are somehow less, I can't wrap my head around it. Why? Well, they're people. They're human beings. They're all the same. Everybody's the same. You know, years ago, I saw Twilight Zone. Maybe you saw it, too. I mean, this would have been back in the 60s, but, you know, what wasn't then when I saw it. It was later on. But it was an episode where it was during World War – I think it was either the Korean War or World War II. And there were two – they spotlighted two officers, and they were out in the jungle. It was a Japanese and American. And they were out in the jungle with their troops and all that. And – through, you know, whatever means, magical, whatever, the two were swapped. And now, you know, the Japanese fellow was now with the American people, but he looked like the American guy and vice versa. And they had to look at things from different perspectives. And that always stuck with me. You know, these people who think blacks are somehow lesser, I would love to see them be a black person for a while and live that life, walk in their shoes. That's called empathy. Because they would be singing a different tune. There is no difference among people. We have different cultures. We have different customs. But so what? You know, it's just, that's what makes us unique. You know, diversity in people, in human beings, is an evolutionary constant. In fact, it's not just in human beings. It's in everything. If you look at the world, there's diversity in everything. Nothing's just the same. I mean, plants, animals, species, there's diversity amongst in the same species. Diversity is an evolutionary constant. It's not an exception to the rule. So we can solve these social problems because we are equal. And we all came from one place. We're all headed down the same path. Number five, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. Excuse me, guess I'm in my throat. Number six, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will creates self-completeness. If everybody was striving towards self-completeness, we wouldn't be having these problems either. Because when we're dealing with the life leadership paragon, which encompasses those three qualities plus self-completeness, we understand that when you get yourself healthy, when you accept yourself just as you are, understand that you're perfect just as you are, and you strive to be better tomorrow than you were yesterday, that's self-acceptance. And then you learn the third rule, which is respect for free will. When you start respecting others, stop trying to control them, stop trying to change them, then the personal responsibility falls into place, and you have now balanced out self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will. And once you balance those out, guess what? Now you're in the realm of self-completeness. Number 8, metaphysical education, practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And that's what this program is about, trying to encourage people, empower people, let you know that you're not alone, that we're all in this together, and we're all striving to do our best. Number 9, expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. That's where all of this is coming. So even with this current issue with the protests and so forth, with racial issues, we can see the healthiness of these 9 principles of belief. I'm telling you, I grow more convinced every day that there is no healthier spiritual philosophy on the planet. If the planet would just practice these 9 principles of belief, it would completely transform this planet. It would completely transform the world. And we wouldn't be having these ridiculous issues with race and so forth. Any comments at this point before I move on?
Well, I think there's a difference between the reality, like philosophy versus economics, and there's just so many different religious belief systems. So
it's so easy to demonize and dehumanize the other, and whatever the other is. And unfortunately, race is a very, primitive and easy way to look at otherness. But I want to say one quick quote. If humans are to survive, they will have learned to take delight in the essential differences between humans and between cultures. They will learn that differences in ideas and attitudes are a delight, part of life's exciting variety, not something to fear. And it's that, by the way, that's Gene Roddenberry. And it's very true. If we can learn to take delight in our differences, then we won't have reason to fear. And it's that fear, and it's a lack of understanding. And I'll be the first to admit, given my life and position, I don't have direct experience of these things. I can only try to empathize. And it is ridiculous, but, you need to have hope in this life. And for those that can't, it seems like a dark place, and that's why we have what we have now. But it's exactly following those 9 principles of belief will lead us to a world with more hope. And with that hope, we can move forward as a species and try to socially evolve further.
Yep.
And then, we have to learn to apply the philosophy. I think that's the hardest challenge for people. Hmm. How do you now take this concept and put it into application? There's a lot of debriefing and, rewiring of our thinking.
Well, a lot of reflection.
That has to happen. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
A lot of reflection.
And so there was a comment by Dr. Stephen about how do we deal with those who profit from the conflict. And, the way that we deal with it, the best that I know, is that we keep working at resolving these issues so that there is no longer any profit from the conflict. And I get that. I mean, it's the way of the world, and that reminds me of the song by Earth, Wind, and Fire, right? Way of the world, child is born with a heart of gold. Way of the world makes his heart so cold. And unfortunately, that's true in many cases. And it doesn't have to be. It shouldn't be. We need to, as far as application of these principles, do no harm, do right. Be aware. That's the thing. It's above everything else. You could boil everything we do down into one simple concept. We strive to raise awareness. you know, we try to help people to become more aware, more self-aware, more aware of others' plight. We try to raise the level of awareness among people. That's the point of everything I do. You know, everything, this program, the schools, the church, everything is designed to help raise the level of awareness. And when we understand that there are people out there hurting just like us in different ways, we all have our things to deal with, then we can start to understand that, you know what, maybe we don't need to be so judgmental. We don't need to be so critical of people, because they're trying, for the most part, most people are trying the best they can with the knowledge, resources, level of awareness that they have at the moment, and try to have some empathy. So do no harm, do right. When you have an opportunity to do right, do it. And how do you do that? Well, part of the work that we do, the primary work, is paying it forward. So if you're in a position, and, you know, maybe you're selling something or something, maybe you're selling something on Craigslist or Facebook or something, you know, and if you don't need the money from that, then why not give it to them and tell them, ask them to pay it forward, especially if you discern that maybe they don't have that much and they need whatever it is you're selling. That's just one idea. You can do that. You know, at the gas station, I've had this happen several times where, you know, a young kid will, hey, you know, is there any way I could borrow $5 or a buck or two, something like that, for gas? You know, you give them. I mean, I've filled up tanks before. You can help them out. That's an opportunity. Somebody on the side of the road, you know, looking for food or handouts or whatever. I mean, that's, everybody's got to decide. I used to be pretty much against that, but now I say, so what? Who cares? They need it. Help them out if you can and move on, you know. So, I mean, these are the little ways we can do it. There's greater ways I'd love to be able to do it. I mean, I have dreams of being able to open up an educational center that would cater to people to help them get back on their feet and teach them these valuable life skills that will then allow them to make a success of their life. And someday when I grow up and everything gets a little bigger, then maybe we'll be able to have the resources to do something like that. But those are just a random ways. There's a zillion ways you can help people. So that's one way of applying things. And as far as the rest of religions, yeah, there's a ton of religions and beliefs. But what the nine principles of belief can fit with about anything, you know, it can fit with just about anything. And if we focus on those, then we're gonna have a better life. We're gonna have a better world. And I want to also tie in another aspect, lessons in these protests and so forth. You know, one of the things I've also had a hard time wrapping my brain around, how in this day and age, some of these cops, these police officers, can end up doing this stuff, you know, when everybody's got a video camera in their phone, everybody's taping everything, and they're not thinking, you know. Maybe they're just not thinking, and so,
or maybe they've gotten away with it for too long.
And maybe you're
used to it.
Maybe you're right, but the thing is with this day and age, how can you do that? You know, I mean, how they need to be on total alert. You know, they need to think. They need to use good discretion, and maybe they're so faced with a criminal element all the time. You know, people being hard and all that, that they have just basically come to initially expect that everybody's bad. Well, everybody's not bad. Most people are not bad. Most people are not in prison for criminal acts. And I know that they have to deal with the criminal element a lot. And I know that's got to be rough. And if that's the case, and they can't handle it anymore, they need to move on to something else. Because not everybody's a criminal. And not everybody needs to be treated that way. And they need to use discretion, and they need to think.
There are certain things that nobody needs to be treated that way, no matter if they've done, you know,
there are many of them that are great at that. There are many cops that are very nice and very good and do a good job. And I'm not blaming them at all. I mean, it's like with anything else. I mean, it's like the Pareto principle, right? You know, 80% of the problems come from 20% of the people. That type, the 80-20 rule. And it's like that most police officers are not doing this stuff. They're doing a good job. It's the few that need to think.
Well, let's look at those that have made good examples by joining their communities and marching and, you know, protest in certain elements. But they're engaging with the communities. And when they're engaging, they're, you know, it's that kind of community policing that's been shown to be effective. But, of course, I don't want to go on rants about that either. But it's just comes back to everybody deserves to believe and have hope that they can have a good and happy life.
I think what we're basically saying, if I can interject here, is that most people are inherently good, want good things, and want to do good. But they aren't necessarily the ones who participate in a corrupt system. And what we're learning is that we must participate, even if it's by getting out and putting in a vote. Mm-hmm. And challenging the system that doesn't allow goodness to participate, if that makes sense.
Well,
so,
well, I to think misattribute Gandhi, you be the change that you want to see in the world. You know, I don't.
What we're seeing now is a great amount of participation. I watched President Obama today speak, and he said being uncomfortable is a good thing. You know, to be out there, and we feel uncomfortable because we are being challenged. Everyone is being challenged. The subject of race is not comfortable, particularly for white people. It's not a comfortable thing, but the numbers of young people, the numbers of all the diversity of people who are coming out in, huge numbers. There is, what we're saying is more people who are good and want good things and want good things to happen, and they don't like injustice. And when we stand up even in a quiet way, even in the face of, in the face of being threatened, and in the face of that, we're willing to take the pain in order to rise above. And I think that, you know, in the last 40, 50 years, at least for the common white society, there hasn't been that facing a great, you know, movement. And what we're doing now is standing up because we're saying, you know what, all our brothers and sisters are in trouble here. That means we're all in trouble. So,
and you know,
go ahead.
No, finish your thought.
No, I was just saying, so this is what the movement and all of us standing up in that and saying, no, there's do no harm, do right, is essentially what people are doing.
You know, one thing I also realize, and this is something that just occurred to me in this way, that our lives are so much more intertwined now between all different ethnicities. And it's such a much more multiracial and racially intertwined culture that we live in comparatively to the past, even though we do see, you know, large segregation, especially in, you know, major cities and areas like that that have historic roots that are going to take a while to overcome. But my generation and the generation, you know, underneath, the Generation Z kids coming up, our entire existence has been intertwined in multiracial societies. You know, some of my entire life growing up, when you have those close relationships and it becomes the norm, just like what Dr. Hunter said, your friends, your family, your brothers, your sisters are at risk, and you need that to stop. You need change, and change can be uncomfortable, but we are on the right path, I hope, of that eventual human enlightenment or evolution at the very least.
And I think that's a good point that Dr. Hunter also mentioned, the kids. I think the kids, the kids that we have now, the generations that are following us, they're much more open to different peoples and different types of races and all that. I mean, they're not like the older generations, and that's good. I mean, we're opening up. It takes time. And I also wanted to reiterate too that, and I already said this, but I just want to make sure it's clear, that I am not personally blaming all cops or anything. And I think that for the most part, the police have done and found an outstanding job, and most of them have just done an outstanding job. I've seen some police officers are great at what they do, and I've witnessed it firsthand. And I always wonder, they have a lot of patience, a lot of them. And I really commend them for that, because you got to have patience for that sort of thing. And they've exhibited that. And so I just wanted to make sure that that was clear. So the greatest gift that you can give, kindness, give people an encouraging word, pay it forward, you know, give them a pat on the back, tell somebody close to you how much they mean to you, and don't take those around you for granted.
Can I just inject that I, you know, very often I go out in my back trail and I go for a walk, and I noticed this several times when I would pass somebody of a different nationality, specifically Asian, and it happened on several occasions where I would always say hello or good morning or good afternoon, and they don't raise their eyes. We have become so prejudiced that they have been suffering so much. The fear is automatic, even if they haven't been directly affected. I make a point of looking up, smiling, say good morning. And even though these folks, they will say hello, but their eyes are lowered, and my heart breaks.
But I think some Asian cultures may. That may be cultural.
Well, here, for the most part, that hasn't been true until lately. And particularly a lot of racism towards Asians in Vancouver in particular. It's always been towards Indigenous people in Canada, more than blacks, although blacks have their issues, trust me. But it's there's been a horrendous number of cases of assaults, verbal to physical, toward Asian people and Middle Eastern people, yes, Dr. Edward. And all I want them to know, I walk into a store that's owned by an Eastern culture, and I say, hello, how are you? And I look at them. And, you know, once you've made contact, and I know the privilege I have as a white woman, I'm fully well aware, I can go into any store, and nobody's automatically assuming I'm going to steal something, you know, or get out of my country stuff, you know, which, honestly, that should be more the truth. But I go in, and as soon as we've made a contact, the friendliness afterward is notable.
Well, they know that you're not going to tear into them.
No, there's a comfort, a sociability, and that's where I can do my part. And that's what I'm saying to other people and the audience listening and anybody in the archives. Take it doesn't even take a fraction of a second to raise your eyes and say hi, good morning, and carry on your way. That's all it takes. It's to acknowledge that not all white people are racist toward Asians and otherwise. And it's I think what's typically happened for people who live in fear, this is my opinion, white people are afraid of their privilege being taken away, and I think historically white people are afraid of payback. That if minorities, as they see minorities, were to truly understand their power in numbers, white people would be at the bottom of the pecking order. And that just, you know, we will just have none of that, will we? So this is where, when white people get angry, well, that's acceptable. Anybody of color gets angry and say, well, what's their problem? You know, and there's an automatic assumption that there's going to be violence. I've seen it time and again. People walk on the other side of the street when they see an Indigenous family coming or people. And this is what I mean by each of us, and knowing who we are, be in that place of peace. You can tune into your intuition to know if there's danger or not, which we are going to talk about that next week. Honing your intuition. That's going to be a big one for next week. But is just to take that second, please, take that second and let people know that you are who you are. I'm not going to apologize for being white. Far from it. It is what it is. I think white people trying to get a tan is kind of an oxymoron to me. But you know.
Well, what if I just don't want to look so pasty?
Yeah, it is what it is, people. But I'm just saying that we're bridging this, and we are slowly, the more of us who stand in who we are and knowing that we are one humanity, and we're one race, one ancestry, you know, and we get it. There are some of us all who get it, and we're working on it together. And our biggest thing, and my message to white people, please, white people need to educate white people. And I think we need to, that's our part. We need to smack each other upside the head to say, you know, that was kind of racist. And not just shut your mouth and give, you know, because silence gives permission. So, you know, challenge it when it's there and just say in a good way, as good as you can. Otherwise, walk away. And, that's just my speech for today because we were talking.
Good. Well, good. And I just want to reiterate, you know, look, this stuff that we're going through now, you know, you've heard of growing pains, right? Well, that's what kind of this is, kind of. It's enlightenment pains. It's evolutionary pains. Yeah. We've got to go through this. And one of these days, probably not in my lifetime, but one of these days, it's going to work itself out. And there's going to be much greater peace among the different peoples. And that's something that, you know, we'll have to work through it. And we keep working. We keep doing our part, like Dr. Hunter said. So take some comfort. This is not going to last. Things will pass. Mm-hmm. But hopefully they'll pass, and then, you know, it'll continue to get better.
I please just inject, Dr. Stephen has written something in the chat that it's really struck a chord with me, and I would like to address it. Okay. He says, I suggest that eye contact has been interpreted as sexual expression, thus causing patriarchal difficulties when women should be kept. One would have to extract such women from those areas from their cultural bindings. You know, let's just stop with that. There are many cultures that see direct eye contact as stealing their spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many cultures that will not, but they will look up even though they don't look you in the eye. When I say eye contact, I'm not meaning a stare down. Now, I'm just saying an acknowledgement upwards, you know, above the neck. And I'm not going to talk about whether women should be extracted from any of their cultures and their cultural bindings. You know, it's okay for Amish women to wear scarves on their heads, but not Muslims, and we have no right to judge that. So I can't help myself at the moment to say, let's put it in check. The Queen herself wears a scarf on her head. She went riding horses the other day. You know what I'm saying? My mother wore a scarf on her head. Everybody just back up. Stop with that stuff. Let people evolve in their own cultures as they will. Respect it. And never mind. Mind our business. Sorry. I had to say it.
All right. So hopefully tonight the discussion has eased some fears, has given you some ideas. You know, you're not alone. We're all just trying to get through this. And we will. I mean, it could be a lot worse than it is. It could have been, you know, it could be the 60s. And it's not. So, you know, we're making improvement. We're making progress. And everybody's going to have their own different cultural stuff. You know, there's aspects of different cultures that I don't agree with nor identify with. And that's, you know, some of them have been touched on here. But that's not me. That's their stuff, not my stuff. And we have to bear that in mind and hope that these folks will broaden out a little bit. Because we all have ways to broaden out. We all have ways we need to broaden out. So anyway, are we going to bypass the cards tonight? We're going to do it.
Well, let's offer really quickly. Anybody want to throw their name out there? I'm up for it. Michael, are you up for it?
Oh, I think we can squeeze a couple in. I think we need to give some people a few minutes to throw their names in chat or to have the opportunity. But
glad to have you back, Dr. Kelly. It's always nice when you come and your once a month visit and, you know, have a talk with us. And
Thanks.
I know that the nine principles of belief is something that is important to remind ourselves of. And, you know, it's really stuck with me for the last 9 years. I know that. And especially do no harm, do right. And, you know, don't give unsolicited advice, et cetera.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
And it's been impactful, and I think impactful for everybody who's been with IMHS and the church and TFU. So but I appreciate the discussion.
Well, thanks. Tonight. Well, it's been nice to be with everyone, and I wish everyone a great month, and I'll be back again at the beginning of next month. And with that, I will let you both continue on with the program and do the cards.
Thank you.
All
well,
right.
We got some names popped up real fast here, Michael, so let's do this. Now, I'm hoping I'm keeping up here pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. Dr. Edward being first.
Yep, and this card wasn't on the top. I didn't pull it, but I was looking at the deck, and I flip it over, and I see the card at the bottom is Don't Hate, wild card number 5. And it seems so appropriate right now. I think that should be the first card of the evening. And I think, Edward, it was pulled. It just was pulled from the bottom instead of the top. And let's see. A low energy signature refuses to learn more in order to better accept and understand others. Hate grows in this low frequency. The result is fear, demonstrated as the need to criticize and control others. This is how wars begin, whether it's in relationships, within families, or between countries. Understanding does not mean one has to agree. It means rising above the low frequency to do no harm, do right, to self and others.
And, you know, in support of that, Edward, I'm getting this sense of familiarity here, the Four of Clubs, which has to do with promises and obligations. So it's revising that. And you know, sometimes in life there's a constant revision of maybe I'm getting the feeling here is maybe learning to say no. And no is just okay. And if you feel the need to give an explanation to that, fair enough. Otherwise, you don't really have to. No is no. But the other is revisiting where your energy is well spent when it comes to what promises you make to yourself. So that's what came up to me. I hope that resonates in some way. Michael, we have Wendy next.
And for Wendy, I pulled number 14, Energy Shift and New Chapter.
Yay.
Energy shifts are a natural result from increased awareness, knowledge, and new attitudes that naturally open new chapters in one's life. It's an excellent time to clarify your vision during this time of shifting energy. Reflect, gather your energy, breathe, and step forward with a renewed sense of direction. Out with the old and in with the new.
Oh, I got a big reinforcement to that one, Four of Hearts, Wendy. You know, if you think it's contemplating things for a moment, looking at what you have, what you don't have, before you cross the river. So it's you see the goal, you see where you need to go, but sometimes it's about regenerating your battery and just pause for a minute. You'll know the moment to move forward. You'll know when you have enough information, and you'll certainly know when it feels right. So a double message there in a shift. Good for you. I like those. You know, there's always a little anticipation, isn't there? Nervousness or anxiousness, but it's never bad as what we think it is. It's just a matter of, it's unfamiliar. So, but I'm excited for you. That's a good one. It feels good.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
William is next. Michael.
And William, I pulled number 36, gratitude. Gratitude is the joy one feels in the heart when the mind awakens to the gifts of life, no matter how seemingly small or insignificant. The truest essence of love lives within the feeling of gratitude, desiring a connection with all life while giving freely without want for return. Gratitude is benevolence that wants to give forward. Take a compliment with graciousness and good manners when gratitude is extended.
Well, in support of that message, William, I got the Tower. I like the Tower. I've heard a lot of interpretations to it that appear to be negative, which I don't get it. I've always seen the Tower as having a foundation, and sometimes things that are extraneous or things, above need to be kind of torn down and rebuilt. But to me, the biggest message about the tower is that you have the foundation. So in conjunction with gratitude, I see it that inherently you know who you are, what you are, and kind of you've got a pretty good sense of that. It's now rebuilding what you want to do with your life. Sorry, there's a plane going over. I don't know if you can hear that. But it's what you want to do and how you want to move forward. So it's taking out old stuff and deciding what you want to build on top of that, but your foundation is intact. So just go from there. Always go from the foundation, and you're good to go.
Very nice.
Audra is next.
All right, Audra. I have number two, esteem and validation. Self-esteem is self-worth based on internal expectations and validation, not to be confused with them-esteem, which is self-worth based on external expectations and validation, that is, what others think. High self-confidence is not the same as high self-esteem. Self-validation is the highest regard that you give to yourself. Fully experience the truths of your own path.
Well, Audra, what I appreciate about this support is the Eight of Diamonds, which is the Eight of Pentacles in tarot language, is it's kind of a work in progress. That's what I call the apprenticeship symbol. The Eight of Diamonds likes to build. It likes to work and grow and keep learning. And you're gaining your strength in the application of what you're doing. So it's like you inching along. It's kind of like an experiential learner, you know. It's not just like reading a book and saying, okay, now I know how to do that. It's you're actually applying yourself to life, and that internal validation is occurring, and while you're at it. So that's sometimes we have to also be, how would I say, aware and accepting of how we function, because each of us has our own way of processing and applying to life. And I'm an experiential learner too. You know, I've learned to better read instructions, like that IKEA table, you know, but I'm way better at somebody showing me. And but what you're doing here is the changes. You're learning about true self-esteem. You're validating yourself, but as you're applying yourself to life day by day. And I see, you know, this is just a flash I had. Somewhere around August is another turn of events for you, Audra. So I would be really encouraged for you that you're working towards something, even though you don't maybe know what that is. So, you know, the universe has always got its mysteries of energy going on, right? So good for you.
Very good.
That's
very
my
good
message. So I don't see any other names. I see some people have joined the chat in the you know, late gatherers in our program, but nobody else has put their name in that I have seen.
No, I was just going through, and I believe that's all we have for tonight for cards. But
awesome,
it has been a very, you know, riveting discussion, and it's always engaging. I always look forward to these discussions, and it's, you know, it's great having Dr. Kelly on with us again tonight. But as always, it's great to have a discussion with you, Dr. Hunter. I always appreciate it.
Thanks, Michael. You too.
Awesome. Well, thank you.
I value it just as much as you do, and of course all the students. And Wendy has said thanks to Dr. Kelly for joining us. There's been a couple of other comments to that effect, and I know it's always appreciated also. So, but you know, next week, as I said, we're going to talk about how to honing in your intuition. And I think intuition and that sensitivity and knowing the differences and how that can work is a really important the important element of us to keep expanding during these really tense, seemingly tense times, you know.
Oh, very tense, absolutely. And you're absolutely correct on that. Well, it's been a great discussion. We're looking forward to next week being able to hone into our intuition. I know I am. I could definitely use some help in that regard. But until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.